well, thanks. How you doing? I checked out of your website and found out a little bit about you, but I don't want to introduce you. I want you to introduce yourself and tell me your story, because you seem to be a very interesting character who's been brought to my attention by a wonderful follower of my work, Rob Crabtree. I believe he's your neighbour.
More or less, yeah.
Yeah?
We go to the same yoga group.
Okay, brilliant. All right then, well, I'd love to hear a little bit about your journey and how you came to be on this path communicating this information.
Well, my background was that I was born in Denmark and raised in a family that was very much involved in the resistance against the German invasion or occupation. Denmark was occupied by Germany in 1940 until 1945. And my grandma and granddad and they were in the resistance, and my grandfather was in jail for having helped smuggling Jews. My dad was in the Danish resistance movement, and so on. So I grew up with all these stories about how to stand up for what is right, even though it can be dangerous, and how to stand up for the truth and be able to and willing to take risks and whatever it takes, but to be strong in tricky situations. And then when I remember when JFK was assassinated, I was only like 5 years, I think. But I remember the immense impact it had on my family, and also with the missile crisis when everybody was thought that there would be a nuclear war and so on. I remember the fear in my family. And so this followed me over the years, and then many years before the JFK film by Oliver Stone came out, I saw the Zapruder film in a documentary somewhere, and it really sort of like hit me, and I just felt there's something so wrong here. So I started looking into that case very, almost like being obsessed. I think I read about 200 books in the subject and watched every documentary I could, and the more I looked into it, the more confused I got, because it was so complex, all the different aspects to it. And I started seeing also that some people that were working for they were part of the mafia in one book, they were also working for the CIA in another book, and some of them were paid off by FBI in a third book, and it was very confusing, all of it. So just for my own sake, I started writing a book to try and put the jigsaw puzzles into places. And while I was doing that, I also got very interested in the Robert Kennedy assassination, as well as the Martin Luther King assassination, and also looking into things like Abraham Lincoln, all the way back to Julius Caesar. And it was like, after a while, I came to a point where I thought, what the hell is going on? It's almost like they have like a template how to do a political assassination, to do away with somebody you want out of the way, and then how to trick the normal people into believing that something else had happened. What I mean is like with a lone crazy guy, a patsy that is blamed for everything, and then you can push forward whatever agenda is that are behind the people who committed the assassination. And in the meantime, while I was, like I say, I was very obsessed with this. I've worked more or less full time. I worked as a journalist at the same time at a small local newspaper. So those years as a journalist gave me the skill how to ask questions and to listen instead of talking, and to gather as much information as possible without, how shall I say, pushing or affecting whoever was talking. And then after some years, the Swedish Prime Minister, Olof Palme, was shot in Stockholm. And I, just like everyone else, thought that the Swedish police was totally honest, that I lived in a country, a white island in the world of democracy, you know, we help the poor and we are the only place in the world where everything is perfect, and all that's because that is what, when you live in Sweden, that is what you're being pumped with all the time. And it was a very peaceful country I grew up in, I thought, because that was what we were being told all the time. And you know, they were very proud of the Prime Minister being able to take his bicycle without bodyguards or anything to and from work, and there were hardly any murders or violent crimes or anything like that before this assassination. So when he was shot, it was like, it was a national trauma. It was so, so powerful. I mean, everybody was in absolute shock after it. And but since the Swedish police said right away, we will do everything we will and we can to track the killer down, and we have all these the proof and all of this, we will find them, whoever did it. Then after a while, I started seeing that it was like, there was almost, when I looked on the other assassinations of JFK, Robert Kennedy, and so, like I told you, it was like almost, I could see like a template how they were committed, even though the details around the assassinations themselves were different. It was almost like they followed a, like, first we do this, then this, then this, then this, then this, then this, to trick the population into thinking that it was the work of a lone crazy guy, and so that people would not see what was going on behind the scenes, the political agenda behind it, and the reasons why whoever it was removed. And due to that list, that template that I made up, from studying the other cases, suddenly I started seeing, oh my God, the same things are happening in Sweden. They're following exactly the same list. And that really freaked me out, because I thought, if that is true, then what the hell is going on, you know? And so I looked at the list I made before from the other cases, and I said, okay, if what happened in Sweden is one of these political assassinations as well, then, and I looked on the template, then this will happen within a few weeks, right? I was. Within a few days, boom, there came the police, or the so-called investigation, out with whatever the next step was, telling us blah, 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 blah. And that really freaked me out, because I thought, oh my God, you know, the country I live in is not the country I believe I live in, if a thing like this can occur. Because that means that, just like in the other assassinations, I'm talking the big, big conspiracies, like these assassination, 9/11, Oklahoma City, and so on. And that means that the investigations, just like in the other assassinations, are part of the killing itself. This template, you, if I can just describe it a bit in detail, how they do it. You have somebody you want to get rid of. Very often it's one of your own that has been working for the global power elite, but for some reason have become untrustworthy or started getting big-headed or something. So you want to get rid of that person. Many times it's more than one reason for it. It was not a case of why was JFK assassinated. You can't answer that with one word. It's many different aspects from different groups in this power elite that comes together. All of them have their own reason why they want to get rid of this person. Anyway, so before you hit a person like that, you manufacture a scapegoat. It's always, almost always, a lone crazy guy. The reason why they want a lone crazy guy is because then there's no reason for the assassination. He was crazy. He just went up and he was crazy and he shot him. No explanation needed. And then you can very easily kill that guy or put him away so that no one can get access to him. And often this guy has no idea what happened either. Sometimes they even mind control so that they, after the shooting itself, they get triggered and starting, and they have no memory of what happened. And it's almost like a tape recorder. Every time they talk about the assassination, they come up with the identical story, saying the same thing again, blah, 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 blah. anyway, you manufacture a scapegoat, then you have a lot of evidence put together against this guy. Or this can be a guy, it can be a group or a yoga group or collectors of parrots or whatever that they put together before. Then before the assassination, they start pumping out you know, rumors about this group or this person, making them look suspicious, so that the public are getting into the mindset of, ooh, these people are weird. Then you have your own investigation put together as well with people that are part of the hit as well. But what happens is, as soon as the shots are fired and that person is dead, boom, in goes their own investigation. And that investigation has only one task, and that is to point all different directions away from the truth. That's the only, they went that away, they went that away, no, they went that away. It's only to confuse. And also the other task they have is to shut up people who gets too involved in finding the real truth. So we have like the investigation, which is the group you should be able to trust, are the one you have to fear if you're a truth searcher. And this, then it gets really scary, because then it's very hard to know who can you trust in this whole thing. Then also you have the problem reaction solution. It's a very, very old way of doing this. And what this group does on a very, very regular basis with these conspiracies is that they create a problem. It's secretly created by the same people who committed. This problem is often a bomb, or if you have 9/11, or you can have the train bombings in Madrid, or you can have the London bombings or something like that. You prepare a scapegoat. It's been trendy for quite a few years now with Muslims, because ooh, they look scary and they've got moustaches and they're dark. Whoa. And their name is Abdullah Karim Khalouf Khalid. That he must be a terrorist.
It's funny you say that, Oli, because you know what I find really strange about that? The reason, because they hate our freedom. Yeah, that's why they're terrorists. That's the most bizarre thing I've ever heard. It goes against every natural fiber in our body to hate our freedom. The West.
I've been in many Muslim countries and in many so-called weird countries. I've been in the Middle East. I've been everywhere. I just meet really beautiful people,
yes,
everywhere. You know?
For sure.
People that are so, they just want to have their, to take care of their family, to be with their friends, to live in peace and harmony.
For
with
sure.
Their neighbors. To, they don't give a rat's ass about the states or to take over the global. That is absolute crap. But that is what we're being pumped with. It used to be the Russians. That was the trend. You know, ooh, they're behind the Eastern Bloc and they look all Russian and they're secret agents. Okay, then that went out of fashion when the wall came down. So they needed to invent someone else. So in on the stage came Abdul Karim Hassumallahu, or somebody like that. That then they could use that. Now they've taken it to the next level. Now they do it so that it's somebody who looks like us, you know, like in Norway. Now they started to make them blonde and blue-eyed, meaning that it can be just anyone. You can't trust anyone anymore. So it's just different trends.
I wanted to make a little comment there about, you know, these most recent assassinations all happened in Oslo. They try to claim, and there is an uprising in so-called Aryanism, you know, neo-Nazism. You see these type of programs on National Geographic all the time. And again, it's like you say, they're trying to pump the public consciousness with this kind of ideology again by putting these programs out. And this is what they did with the dude in Oslo. They actually made him out to be part of some sort of Teutonic Aryan sect.
Yeah, it's absolute bullshit.
Yeah.
When you look into these things, it's the same story again and again. It's really tiring to read and to get into it, because it's like I've come to a point where I don't really think there is such a thing as a real terrorist anymore.
No, there isn't.
Because every time you look into it, they're funded by the same elite through the CIA or different agencies. They're supplied with weapons and manuals and everything by these guys. They're set up and trained by them. So it's like, what's going on? And then, like with the Oslo killing, you always have the same story, the shootings in the States again and again and again, that once you start putting together the pieces, they don't fit. You know, the truth is very simple always. The truth is the truth. It's the truth. You don't need to know a lot about it. Even if there's like 50 people around whatever happened, they would have a very similar story, even though it can differ. But there won't be massive difference because the truth of what happened happened. But as soon as you make a conspiracy means an act of more than two or three people involved. The more people involved, the more lies, the more things you have to cover up, the more difficult it gets for the conspirators to keep it up then, and it just gets more and more and more complicated. And this is what we see as well with these shootings, like for instance in Oslo or in the States, all of these in the cinemas and Sandy Hook and so on. What the witnesses said in the beginning, you have to be very observant on the first day when it happens, because very often as soon as a day or two goes by, the testimonies of the witnesses are changed or disappears of what people actually saw. For instance, in Oslo, they said that there were two shooters. That went quite very fast, but that is what the witnesses saw that survived, that there was this Anders Breivik, but there was also a guy with dark hair walking around with two weapons, as far as I remember, shooting as well. And while they were shooting, they were on the mobile with the police. And also, one of the things that you also always see is that the so-called hunt of the murder, or the like, for instance, with Olof Palme, it took almost 5 hours after the killing before they shut off the central city of Stockholm. You know, like, it's unreal.
Yeah.
With Anders Breivik, it was 2 hours that he could walk around and just shoot and shoot and shoot. And, well, we're really sorry, but, well, that there was no gas for the boat. Oh, did you see when they came out in this rubber boat? There were like 11 people in it. It almost sank, you know, and they put it in at the closest point so they could just go right across the strait? No, they put it kilometers off the road so that it took forever to get down there. And it's just delayed, you know. Parents called in and said, geez, they're shooting out there. Oh, we're very sorry, we can't do anything if we can't get it confirmed by people on the island. Come on, it's like unreal. And it's just, you need to see, to study the different occasions of these type of the incident, to see the pattern, to see that it's not just because, well, I'm really sorry, but the helicopter didn't have fuel today. Okay, but it's like, yeah, there was a ferry there, you know? Why didn't that work? Because you're just taking the ferry across. No, sorry, he could have shot at us. You are the police, your squad. Nothing happened. Delay. To get the effect they needed, this is the horrible thing. When they create these problems, they need to make it really awful to get the reaction they want so that they can come with a solution. And the way they get these reactions are from really awful, bloody massacres. And it doesn't work to get the impact from people. And it doesn't work with shooting old guys, you know, in a pensioners home or something like that. No, you need kids, you need nuns, you need nurses, women, to get the reaction pumped up by, to pump up these horrific images on media, to get the reaction from people that they want, where people say, oh my God, this has to stop, this has to stop, and then they turn towards the people who are actually the ones
who are behind the problem to start with, so that they can come with a solution. And the solution is always more control, more armed forces, more surveillance, more limited, that people will be more and more tied down, that their liberties will be taken away from them, that weapons will be, that the population cannot have weapons anymore, and so on, so that they will be more and more easily controlled. That is the basic thing with these things, is to get the mass population tied down and totally controlled, with no arms, with no power to say anything, and microchip and surveillance and all of it. It's the same pattern that comes again and again. And it's come to proportions that are absolutely ridiculous. Like, if you look into this Sandy Hook thing, it's all staged. It's not even real anymore. You know that you're aware of this, where they used the actors, like the parents and kids who were dead, suddenly turn up in the lap of Obama for a photo session. The lawyer from one occasion, and one that, I think it was the Batman massacre, suddenly it's one of the mothers in the Sandy Hook shooting. And when you look at it before, these interviews are filmed with these parents, they can't stop laughing. You know, it's like it's so obvious. If you turn down the volume, look at their faces. These are not people that have just lost a child. They're people being part of a big scam. And I think the reason why they try to set it up now with actors and so on is because if you really had people who lose a child in a horrible situation like that, they will never quit until they find the truth. They will never give up. So when you commit a thing like that, you have a problem with all these relatives and families that are up your butt trying to track you down. So that is, I think, this Sandy Hook thing, they did it all staged up. I mean, there's not one true word about that at all anywhere.
Very interesting, Ollie. Yes, I totally agree. And there is a template, and I from my own research have to agree with absolutely everything you've said. So I kind of have an idea of where this goes back to. What do you reckon the source of all of it is?
The source of all of these, what do you mean, who are behind it?
Yeah, well, it's the same template, so it's got to be obviously one source.
Yeah, that is the what I keep getting back to again and again in when I look into these things. It goes back to what I call the global elite. I don't know how high it goes up. I've gone up to the level where there's three main groups. It's the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, and the Council on Foreign Relations. The members of these three groups, you can always, if you find out who are members there, these are really people that have sworn their loyalty to this global fascist state that they're trying to create. I know that there's a lot of people saying that above that they're the Illuminati and the Jesuit and these things, but that I've never gotten to that level, you know, because that is even higher up. But I know that this group, it's only like 2,000 people in total, I think, controlling 9 billion of us. It's a real joke that we let them, because most of them are old men and stuff, so it really is a joke. But these people, especially like if we take the Bilderberg group, these people are creme de la creme, you know, top people from top Western, the Western world mostly. Now more and more Chinese members have come in, but they handpick people from different countries. Like if you take Sweden, for instance, it's not a big country, so you need about maybe 11, 15 people, but in key positions to control the whole country. If we're talking about lawyers, judges, military people, you got royal family, you got politicians, you got communications, you got and so on. But key people, very, very important that it's the key people. Because if you got somebody in a key position, he can control the whole power pyramid underneath him. And then another person can control the power pyramid underneath him, and then it all goes into one, all these different pyramids go into one big pyramid controlled by this small group. And then if you do the same with, I mean, nowadays it's more or less all countries, I think, in the Western world at least, are controlled by these groups. And that makes it very, I mean, if you look at the situation in the world and you say, well, the States did that, and England did that, and France did that, you totally misunderstood the whole thing, because we're talking about a group of people with many different nationalities, almost like using the countries as franchise. You have the same model that you just use in different countries. And then, when you come from that point of view, it's no surprise when suddenly Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan are doing exactly the same thing. You think, oh my God, because there's the Atlantic Sea in between you, you think, oh, it's the Thatcherism or Reaganism. But there's exactly the same agenda. They're holding hands, doing exactly what the agenda says. And then, as far as I know, if we go to the States, for instance, the last real president, and he wasn't really even a real president, but was JFK. I mean, he came to power, but with the help of mafia money as well through his dad. But since he was assassinated, it's just one long row of presidents that are part of the group that killed him or put there. It's just a different front face to the same machine that's just moving forward like a tank. And now the latest one they got is the Obama face, who's not even a real identity. I mean, when you look at it, they put him together to fit the model as perfect as possible. And he's doing a great job. I mean, he's somebody you really want to love. When he speaks, you love to listen to him. Beautiful voice, very nice personality and so on. If you look behind the scenes, awful, awful, awful what's going on there, but with a beautiful face. And this is the scary part. So people who think that well, he's a lot better than Bush have totally misunderstood it. It's the same tank behind it, just pushing forward but with a different face. And they do it, they manipulate a lot, playing with our minds before they swap faces as well, president faces. I mean, like George Bush Sr., he's one of the big players in this global elite. He's one of the real guys. But his son, absolute joke. But he was put there as a puppet, like many of the other ones, as a puppet, so the other ones could just push forward the agenda. Then what they did was that to create a problem so that they could get the reaction they wanted from the public, so that they could come with a solution. They made Boy George, George Bush, they made him, the last few years, they made him so awful, 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 that people were just like, we want to get rid of him, just get him out of here, we need someone else. Take him away, wait, 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 stop, stop the violence, stop the madness. And one that pushed that pressure out came Barack Obama. No one had ever heard of him, ever, never. But then suddenly he was pushed forward like a rock star in on the stage. The media that they controlled pumped him up like he's the Messiah, he will be the savior. And in on stage came Barack Obama. He was named president, the best president ever by Time magazine, before he was even elected. It's like unreal. He was given the Nobel Peace Prize for things to come in the future, things he had not yet done. Absolute joke. He And the way they, one of the ways they prepared the public mind, in my opinion, was with this series 24. Do you remember that? 24 with Kiefer Sutherland.
Yes.
It was a great series. There were, in, as far as I know, there were three different seasons. And the first season, Kiefer Sutherland is playing an FBI agent who is working closely with his president. And this president, guess what, was black. When this series came out, a black president was unheard of. But this black president, not even did he look a little bit like Barack Obama, but he was wonderful. He was a man of strong, strong principles. He was standing strong in whatever situation. He was not wavering in any way. You just loved him. I mean, that actor could have been elected president after the series because he was just amazing. Then season two, suddenly he started becoming, allowing torture and, you know, allowing assassinations and allowing this and that. And in his third season, he was just like Obama is now. But that changed the mentality of people, in my opinion, how they open up to the idea of a black president. And then when Obama came, they even constructed, I mean, his real name is Barry Soto, and he was a former CIA, working for the CIA, but they put together this identity as Barack Obama, where they put the middle name Hussein, so that the Muslims would like him, Barack, so the Africans would like him, black, but not too black, he looks a bit European face, I mean, he hasn't got this wide black type of nose, he's got a feature that would work well with a white community. Then he was Indonesian, Hawaiian, such a mix, you know, great cocktail, let's just stir it around so that it would fit everyone, so he would be pleasant to everyone. And he came, boom, it just took off. This is why they had so much problems with this birth certificate of his, because he wasn't born. Barack Obama is a person who was not born anywhere and did not grow up anywhere. He was constructed under the surveillance of Henry Kissinger and Brzezinski, or whatever his name is, to have like almost like a set of people trained over years, so that they have almost like in a chess play that, okay, now the situation like this, we need that type of player. Okay, in with him on stage, you take over here, out with that one. So they're playing with our minds like on a chessboard, in my opinion.
Yes. So yes, indeed. I was wondering, Ollie, you know, you've mentioned a little bit about a few people, and I'm surprised, having done all the research you've done on assassinations, you say you haven't yet gotten to the Jesuit level. You've not yet taken the road to Rome?
I have. The way I see it, like, London is this global elite's financial center, Washington is the war center, and Rome is the religious center that they're using. But they're very interactive with all the weapons and smugglers, you know, pedophile gangs and drugs and weapons and oil. It's just going in this triangular, from all of them are deeply involved.
Yeah. Now, I know you mentioned earlier that JFK was brought to presidency with mafia money. I was just wondering if you knew what the mafia was. The Mafia Commission is actually a Catholic order. They're controlled by the Roman Catholic Church, the Vatican. And JFK was, in fact, a Catholic himself. That's the irony of it. They assassinated their own man, someone of their own religion, the first Catholic president of America.
The thing was that he was helped to the power by the mob. Mm. Then when he got into power, he appointed his brother, Robert, to start chasing down the same people that had funded him,
yeah,
which pissed people off in a big, big scale.
For sure.
Robert Kennedy, I think within 1 year, he got the percentage of convictions against the mafia up with 700%. You know, so people were very, very upset with that. They helped him there, and then he turned their back on them. This is one of the, like, that is one of the reasons why the mob looked after JFK. Then there were the oil people in Dallas that was very upset with him, the whole military industrial complex. There were so many that he upset when he, I think it was under the during the missile crisis when, do you remember there was this ship with missiles coming from Russia towards Cuba, and they were very afraid that these missiles would be installed on Cuba because Cuba is so close to the States. So Kennedy and his administration told Gorbachev, if this ship crosses this line, if you cross this line, we will fire back nuclear weapon. I mean, we're talking a nuclear war between the two nations. And what happened was that Kenny was almost sitting with his finger on this red button that would stop the whole thing, and his whole army staff behind him was going, push it, push it, push it, wanting to get this whole Holocaust going. But he refused, and people who saw it said that he sat there with tears in his eyes and just said, I will not be the one who does this to the world. And I think after that, suddenly JFK, from being a playboy and involved in, you know, like in La La Land, with just being really a bit drunk with all the power and the glamour around the whole thing, he suddenly saw that, my gosh, we're almost on the verge of destroying the world. This has to stop. This is absolute madness. Yeah. And after that, he made a 180-degree turn and started turning against the people who had helped him into power for their own reasons. So he said, I'm going to crush the CIA into 1,000 pieces. I'm going to go for the Federal Reserve. I'm going to stop that they make the money, that we will make our own money and get out of the strangled grip of death from these bankers. I will withdraw the troops from Vietnam. I will hunt down the mafia, and so on and so on. And it was just like unheard of. And he got rid of the people like Alan Dulles and Charles Cabell and these people that were holy cows within the security agencies.
And they were Knights of Malta. They were holy cows. Knights of Malta are holy cows, literally.
Yeah. And that they were later the people who were part of the assassination and also part of the Warren investigation.
Yeah, for sure. You know, what's interesting is I've read this lovely little piece by Jackie Onassis, which I thought was very telling. She wrote a little poem about JFK. It goes, he may know love, but he won't know peace, for he must go seeking the golden fleece. And if you understand a little bit about mythology and sort of how it ties into gods of the pantheon and how that sort of transcends down into, if you know a little bit about reptilian folklore, mythology, you understand how that all ties into what's going on. And it very much is a case that gives away Jackie Onassis, or Jackie Kennedy at the time. She actually knew a hell of a lot if she was able to say that he was seeking the Golden Fleece. Because if you know the real deep symbolism, what the Golden Fleece really represents, she knew a lot as well. So she was saying outright that he was trying to seek these guys out, you know, in this little poem. And she loved him, you know, she really did. And I thought, at just a few lines, it's so, so telling.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit more with regards to your work that you're doing.
Well, like I say, for many, many years, I think it's, I don't know, 20-odd years, I've been working very, very relentless on finding out what actually happened in Stockholm that night in February 1986, when the Swedish Prime Minister was shot down.
Yeah.
And what I thought was a very easy case, just like I was being told, has turned into an extremely complex conspiracy, with the ties going all the way back into the JFK. I even tracked down people who were part of both assassinations. That they came, they are directly connected, which is mind-blowing when you think of it. Mm-hmm. And these two assassinations are just one in a long string of, I wouldn't call it pearls, but a long string of connected incidents with lots and lots of people who have been eliminated and so on. So it's almost like one of the main groups, if we go down to the street level where these crimes are committed, one of the groups that keeps popping up is a group called Operation 40. There was it was installed on the order of President Eisenhower, but with Richard Nixon as the one putting it together, funding by George Bush Sr. He was the one who gathered the funds from the Texan oil people and other places. And this group was put together to assassinate Castro. That was the first task. And it was called Operation 40 because it to begin with, it consisted of 40 highly skilled assassins, most of them exiled Cubans that used to be military on Cuba. And then when Castro came, they had to flee the country, and they came very pissed off to Miami, and that's where they got recruited by this group.
Okay.
Part of this group was also, or in charge of this group, was a CIA operative called David Attlee Phillips, who is very central in the Kennedy assassination. He goes under the name of Howard Benson as well, and he's got different other aliases. He, together with a CIA operative by the name of Howard E. Hunt, they were the ones in charge of this group. And Howard Hunt is also totally essential in the JFK assassination. We're talking about on the street level. These people, with all these kind of conspiracies, it's on a need-to-know basis. People only know their own part. Very, very few people know the whole picture. They only know their little part, and this is made so that even if somebody starts telling or becoming a whistleblower, he will not be able to reveal the whole picture. It's just when enough people do the same thing that you can start putting together the pieces.
Mm, yes, indeed.
Anyway, but in this group were, among others, okay, this Operation 40 was, like I say, was consisted of 40 highly skilled assassins. And the first task was to assassinate Fidel Castro, which they tried several times, but they never made it all the way. But then when JFK suddenly started to become they couldn't trust him anymore, they just turned this cannon, prepared cannon, towards him. So actually the people that were part of killing Kennedy, many of them were members in Operation 40. And if I can go from right to left, sort of the shooters in Dealey Plaza, you have in the Daltex building, there was a shooter called Charlie Nicoletti. He was an assassin from the Chicago mob. And he had a radio operator called Hale Braben, or Jim Braben, who was also connected to the Chicago mob. It was like, just with the assassination of Julius Caesar, everybody had to put in people so that everybody had dipped their hands in blood, so that no one could rat on anyone else without going down themselves. This is part. So that's why the shooters in this comes from different groups as well. So you have Chucky Nicoletti in the Daltex building. Then on the sixth floor, where Lee Harvey Oswald is said to have been shooting, he was not there. But you had Eladio Del Valle, who was part of Operation 40. He was that was the guy they killed at the same time with Dave Ferry. I don't know if you remember from the JFK film. On the same floor, you had an exiled Cuban called Arminio Diaz Garcia, a black guy. That is who the witnesses see. They see a black guy on the sixth floor. And then on the seventh floor, you had Richard Kane, who also was connected to the Chicago mob. These are the three on the sixth floor. Then if we go further to the left towards the grassy knoll, you have there's a white Chevy that is parked up against the white wall. To the left of that, you will see one shooter. His name is Frank Sturgis, or Frank Fiorini. He was part of Operation 40 as well. We go further left, you come to the grassy knoll where the so-called, people see him as, he's been called the Black Cat and so on, because there's this black figure. But this man, he was dressed in a police officer uniform, a black Dallas police uniform, and his name was Lorenzo Sarti. He was brought in from the Marseille mob. He was a very, very skilled assassin as well, used in many different ways, later killed in Mexico City. We go to the tree behind the fence, the wooden fence. There, the shooter, his name was, or it's James Files. He's still alive to this day, and he's in prison, and he's been telling a lot about his part of the whole thing. James Files, he was also Operation 40, and, no, sorry, he was also connected to the Chicago mob. But James Files was also working for the CIA, and his controller, as they're called, was David Ackley Phillips. If you remember, he was one of the guys, the top guys of Operation 40. And David Ackley Phillips was also the controller of Lee Harvey Oswald. Okay? So here the patsies and the people involved during the shooting are connected. And this is very often the case. It was the same in Oklahoma City and so on. That the patsy that they blame for this is actually to start with working for the agency themselves. And I think the reason why they do is that then they can totally control that person. They can also set them up. They can build up all the evidence against that person because they are already in control of him. It's not sort of like a loose goat that can do whatever.
Yeah.
If we continue in this of this Operation 40, we're only talking 40 people, so there's a very limited but very powerful group here. We got Bernard Barker. He was in the Watergate burglary. You had Frank Fiorini. I just mentioned him, Sturgis, as one of the shooters. In the Watergate burglary was connected to the Kennedy assassination. They were trying to cover up, get hold of evidence against Richard Nixon and other people in the Watergate hotel there. That was the reason for the burglary. But the people who did the burglary were all involved with Operation 40.
Okay.
You got Felix Rodriguez. Felix Rodriguez was, like I said, involved in the Watergate. He was one of the Watergate burglars, but he was also very, very involved in the whole Iran-Contras deal and working as a right hand for George Bush Sr. He was also the guy who got the order to track down Che Guevara, and they did, they tracked him down. He was the one who gave the order to eliminate him as well, to kill him. But the one who shot him was, got a blackout.
No worries. I wanted to ask you quickly, you mentioned the Watergate Hotel and the Watergate scandal. I was wondering if you knew that the Watergate Hotel was actually owned by the Vatican?
By the who?
The Vatican.
I did not know that.
Yeah, well, when they make a mess, they make it in their own backyard so that they can clean it up. You know?
I'm so not surprised.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know what? All your information is really good, and I'll be honest with you. It's some of it's new to me in terms of the detail. You've done a lot of research, but I'm very surprised. Like, I'm very surprised, considering how much research you've done and how much information you know, that you haven't actually got to the source.
What do you mean, the source?
You're at the level of the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, and I mean that is the lowest level of the control structure. There, I mean, people talk about the Illuminati and the Jesuits, and they're relevant, but even more so, going to the source of it all, which of course is the Babylonian Roman cult that control everything. You know, the Vatican Assassins. I don't know if you read Brother Eric John Phelps's book, Vatican Assassins.
I have looked into it. The thing is that I came to a point early on that I needed to focus on one part only, on whatever my part was, and to get as informed as possible on that level, because I also felt that, you know, for me to do, for instance, like what David Icke did with going into the reptilian part and all of these things and UFOs and so on, it makes the person lose credibility, and I wanted to stay in an area where I had credibility and where I had the knowledge to talk about it. So I focused on the levels up to the Bilderberg group, up to there, and then I let the rest be for other people who can focus on that part. These things they're so complex that it's very hard for normal people to take them in. So I've decided to just stick on the more or less the street level of these assassinations.
Let me put this to you another way. When you look at the structure of an assassination, okay, when you're looking at it from the event where it actually happens, it's complex because there's so many elements and lies and ends put out. But as you start tracing all the little various lines, they start to merge and come together to a single point. And you realize that single point actually merges with other single points, links to other assassinations. And the single point that all these other lines run into is, in fact, the Vatican and the Roman cult. For me, as you say, yes, it's complicated, it's complex, there's lots and lots of detailed information and facts that we can focus on. But ultimately, if we're not looking at the source, we actually there's no point in doing any of that because we're not getting anywhere. It actually is a lot simpler to look at it the other way around. Instead of looking at it from the street level, you look at it from the source, because then it's one point. It's not a million different things you've got to look at. You can then see the same themes following through in every single assassination. Like, you look at every single assassination, the Knights of Malta are involved. Forget the Trilateral Commission, Bilderberg Group, and the other one that I mentioned, Council of Foreign Relations. Forget about them. They are low level. They are put there to keep us distracted. Okay? Yes, they have a part in the global conspiracy, but forget about them. Right? They're one level of distraction. Where we need to be going is right to the apex of all the evil, where all the assassins are trained, okay? And they're all trained through the Holy Alliance. And the Holy Alliance is the world's entire intelligence network, be it CIA, KGB, whoever it is. The intelligence, global intelligence network, is ultimately controlled by the Vatican. And every assassination that comes out of the Vatican, because they're trained through the Vatican. I mean, I've just made a documentary called The Last of the Boers, featuring an assassination of one of the presidents of South Africa, Dr. Verwoerd. Same situation as JFK, and I mentioned JFK in this film as well. He was obviously trying to get rid of the control structure, get, you know, South Africa independent, and they killed him. And you look at the template again, as you talk about the patterns of the assassin that comes along that kills him, and how it was played out, and how this assassin ended up in the same place being deprogrammed as other assassins go to. All assassins seem to go to the same place to be deprogrammed. Yeah? It's quite funny. Like, why would they take him all the way out of South Africa to be deprogrammed, kind of thing? So there is this, I agree, there is this pattern, but what if we're not looking where the pattern is leading to, really we're not getting anywhere. And this is my point to you, is please, I urge you to go and have a look at those higher levels. I admire your research and I really love all the information you've collected. But again, focusing on the details just confuses people. We need to look at the source.
I can agree with you. At the same time, it's because of people like myself who have spent so many years that these levels, on the higher levels, are now being more and more exposed.
I agree. Absolutely. Because I agree.
These have not been known for so many years by so many researchers. It has taken so much work from so many to reveal all of these different levels. Yeah. And now we're at a time where I think it's an amazing time, because so much is coming out now and so much is being exposed now. So
yeah,
I agree. From today's perspective, for sure, go for the top right away.
Well, I just think it's all, I love all the detail. I'm a researcher and I'm a writer. I love all of it. I really do. The thing is, this detail's been out there now. People in our realm of research and areas, they know this stuff. Okay, maybe not in as much detail as researchers like you or I, but they've got a general gist of it. What people are now looking for is, all right, who are the ultimate culprits and how do we get rid of them? Right, we know what they're doing. We know how they're doing it. How do we get rid of them? And I really, really hope that with more information like yours that people are putting out there about how these things are all connected, with very good words you use, templates, the distinctive pattern which we all need to recognize, yeah? With that, we will ultimately be able to assess and conscientize for ourselves that things aren't the way they're supposed to be. Is there, let me ask you, Oli, what do you think the solutions are going forward? I mean, what do you hope to achieve with the work that you're doing?
I just want to stop the madness. I'm not out to get revenge. I'm not out in anger. It's like this. I feel like we've got this beautiful, beautiful world, beautiful Mother Earth, but it's like there's a cancer growth that has been affecting and threatening to kill her.
Yeah.
And by exposing this, we need to, you know, when you've got a boil or something like that, you need to cut the boil and it will be really smelly and awful for a while, but then after that, the body can heal itself. And I think by exposing these things, not coming from hatred or anger, but just exposing it, that will help heal the whole situation. It's just like in a schoolyard, there's one big bully that has been terrorizing the whole neighborhood, and we just need to stand up. And they've been doing it by manipulation.
Mm.
So the more we can expose how these manipulations are being done, the more people that become aware of that, the harder it is for them to get away with it. And I think now we're at a wonderful point where so many people are seeing what's going on, and through the internet have been getting access to so much information that they won't be able to continue like this. And I'm very, very positive about the future.
Good.
And it's a beautiful time to be here, because this is the time where the world will turn into the paradise it's supposed to be. Because I think if this group, if these people stop messing around with the world, it's going to turn into a beautiful, beautiful place.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Have you got any books and documentaries out that you'd like to tell us about?
I've got on my website, if you go there, it's www.murderofpalme. I've got several different books there on my own. It's Coup d'etat in slow motion. This is the one about the assassination of Olof Palme. It's about more than 800 pages, very, very detailed, with photos, maps, documents, everything that I've been able to reveal and uncover. And it, like I normally say, it's not a book about my opinion of what happened. I've just put forward all the evidence, and then it's up to the reader to make up their own mind.
Yeah.
But I sure can promise that anyone reading it will understand that the official story is absolute bollocks.
Yeah, for sure.
There's not a true word anywhere. Then I've got another book called Shadow of Tears, which is about a trip I made. It's a bit of a crazy trip. I took an old bicycle from Sweden. I was heading for South Africa, and then instead I ended up in Iran during the war. And just like everyone else, I thought Iranians were crazy people running around screaming Allah, shooting each other. But coming into that country, I was just met by so, so beautiful people in an extremely difficult situation. And I met some beautiful Iranian friends there, and it turned out that they were under a lot of threat. So I risked everything, and I helped to smuggle them out through Russia, East Germany, up to Sweden.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
It was a very difficult experience, but at the same time very beautiful, because everybody got out. One was murdered, but everyone else got out, and now they have beautiful lives and kids, and they're doctors, and you know, like helping in many different ways in Sweden. So
wow.
I'm really trying to get that made as a movie at the moment, so I hope that will go through.
Wow, that is beautiful, Ali. That is a very touching story. I might be interested in working with you on that one, actually.
Well, you're so welcome.
Yes.
It's on the website as well. You can see it. You can download it for free. All the things I made, the music, the books, everything can be downloaded for free from my website. There is a donation button, which I would be so, so happy if people use, because in many years I'm with very little income during all of this research, so very appreciated if somebody would share some. And I also got a kid's book there that is built on the yoga principle. It's called Yolanda Yoga Panda. And the yoga principles, I think, are really, really beautiful. Those are the ones that Martin Luther King built a lot of his on, and also Mahatma Gandhi. You know, truthfulness, non-violence, non-greed.
Oh, beautiful. So that's for kids. How old?
From 2 to 78.
Oh, for all kids then.
All of them. No, it's and then I got another book that I'm working on called Guilty Victim. It's it's about the Palmer assassination, but showing a totally different level than I do in Coup d'Etat in slow motion.
Okay.
It's because that is built. It's written as a novel, where it's dead on to the truth, but where the names are just changed, that's all. But it's showing a whole new level of what I really think happened.
Yeah.
I also got a book called Remind Me, which is about how I think that the universe is programmed, and how I think we can, if we can understand the code of the matrix, we can also create a much more beautiful life for ourselves and others. I think I felt that it's almost like Jesus and many other of the big guys, many of the gurus, and also people like Louise Hay, Wayne Dyer, and they, in my view of seeing it, it's almost like they're saying the same things, but from different angles. And I try to put it down in a very compressed form as a game manual, where the game is is life, and how to crack the code. I think that was what Jesus said when he said, listen guys, there's a way that it's a lot easier than just struggling, and you can, if you choose the way of love, that frequency will just solve all the lower frequencies. It will just delete them. And like when he said, there is no death. You can turn water into wine. You can walk on water. He was saying, crack the code. I see him as a great hacker, you know.
Yeah, interesting interpretation. I like that.
And anyway, it's called Remind Me, and you can download that as well.
Oh.
But if I can please go back to Operation Fortune for a while.
Yes, of course, please.
Okay, in this group, because it's, even though you think maybe the details are not that important, the details are important to be able to connect the points so that other people can see the connections and see the whole picture. Yeah. And for instance, for about 10 years, the commander of this group, his name was José Perdomo. José Perdomo was a very skilled assassin. He was part of many of these big hits. Then he disappeared in 1974. And then, on the night of when John Lennon was assassinated, suddenly José Perdomo turns up and is the doorman to the left of John Lennon when he's shot. He was a nice-looking gentleman at that time. And he was standing to the left, David Chapman was standing to the right. And when Lennon was walking towards the building, there were four shots fired, and he was hit from the left with all four shots. And if you listen to the first witnesses, there's some YouTube recordings and stuff like that, where there's a woman saying he was arguing with the doorman. And also they heard the doorman say something to Chapman. And in my opinion, something like, you have shot him, you shot Lennon, or something like that. And after that, Chapman just stood like a zombie.
Mm.
waiting to be caught. This is a typical behavior of a Manchurian candidate when they've been prepared. It was the same in Oslo, Anders Breivik, when he was standing shooting. When the squad team came, they shout, they called his name, they already knew his name, and right away he put down his gun and just lowered his hands and stood waiting for it to be taken care of. It's the same again and again. Yes, you get indeed. The same kind of pattern with repetition.
So let me ask you, now we're talking about John Lennon, why do you think they killed him? What is your ideas about that?
Everyone who stands up for peace and have a voice that is powerful becomes a threat to them. They thrive on violence, death, destruction, fear. These are the weapons. So anyone, also Bob...
Ollie? You've cut out. Ollie?
They get rid of them. That was the reason with Martin Luther King. That was the reason with Robert Kennedy. They tried to shut down Robert Kennedy, scare him off by shooting Martin Luther King as well. They wanted to get rid of him. But Robert just continued, and many people are not aware of it. There was only a month between the Martin Luther King and the Robert Kennedy assassination.
Jeez, whiz.
Then when they hit him, they shot most people down for a long time. Bob Marley was another one. Bob Marley was, do you know how he was murdered?
No, please, let's talk about this. This is interesting.
Bob Marley, if you see it, if you listen to his lyrics as well, he's very, very, you know, stand up for the rights.
Yeah. Yes, I love his music.
Freedom to everyone. Beautiful. Do you know, like, more and more people were listening to him. William Colby, the former chief of the CIA, who was involved in many, many of these horrific, awful things that has happened in the last 50 years. He was deeply involved in the Kennedy assassination, Operation Phoenix in Vietnam, where about 20,000 Vietnamese people were eliminated or assassinated. He was part of building up the Stay Behind movement in Europe and all the Western... And this Stay Behind movement is today one of the most powerful tools they have in what they call the strategy of tension, where they use so-called terror acts to frighten the population, to beg for more protection. And so when you look into many of these terror acts and assassinations, you can track them down to Stay Behind. And William Colby was one of the major players in building it up. He was also the ambassador or working in Sweden at the embassy, building up the Swedish part of the Stay Behind, where Olof Palme was very much involved. Anyway, this William Colby, like I say, he was involved in many of the assassinations, and his son, Peter Colby, is a documentary, making documentaries. And he was in the middle of making a documentary on Bob Marley, and when they met the first time, he brought a pair of cowboy boots. Whoever gave him these cowboy boots, I do not know, but Peter Colby had them with him and gave them to Bob Marley, and Bob was really pleased and said, thank you so much, tried them on, and when he put on the right boot, he stuck his foot on something, his big toe, and he got it out, and when they took it out, it looked like a little metal tin, you know.
Yeah.
That had punctured his toe. And later he developed a cancer in the exact same big toe. You tell me about anyone else, you know, who had cancer in a toe. I've never heard of it. Maybe it's some kind of... I don't know if it exists, but that is where the cancer developed that later killed him, from the exact same toe. And also when he was really sick, or when he was getting sick, he was being approached by a doctor, a white guy, who has very strong Nazi connections, who was helping him, but for some strange reason, he just got worse and worse, and then in the end he died.
Wow.
I can't prove it's a murder, but for me it smells a long way.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me at least.
No, it's I know Jimi Hendrix was murdered as well, but I'm not sure who, but he was, Jimi Hendrix did not die of an overdose.
No.
He was held down and drowned in red wine. They held him down and just filled him up.
Yeah.
When he was brought in by the ambulance, when they tried to resurrect him, there was just wine pumping out of his lungs. His whole lungs were filled up with red wine. So somebody had held him down and just filled him up.
Yeah.
And so he drowned.
Oh, God. Well, I heard there was more wine in his lungs than in his stomach. See, obviously he wasn't swallowing it.
No. You can't do that on your own.
Yeah.
You can't do it on your own.
Yeah.
So, no, there's many sad events in this long string of things. And you know, it's okay if I just talk about different things. Do you know the reason why they hit the Oklahoma City, the building there, is, for one thing, it was, if you see all the pictures of that building, you got this big Freemason symbol on the outside. And also Alfred P. Murray, who it was named after, he was also a higher Freemason. But then the reason I believe that it was exactly that building they chose was one of the reasons they were children. There was a daycare center, which was great for their purpose because, like I said, they need these horrific images to be pumped out in the media to get the proper reaction from the public so that they can come with a solution. But just before that, do you remember the White River scandal around Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, property scandal, where they were deeply involved in a lot of illegal, awful things? Bill Clinton was also deeply involved in the Iran-Contra smuggle, where they flew out weapons stolen from the National Guard through Colin Powell, and then in exchange for drugs coming in from Nicaragua, in planes coming in and out of the States, using a small airstrip in a small town called Mena in Arkansas. At that time, Bill Clinton was the governor. And you know, Arkansas is like Farmer Brown country. It's not where presidents are raised. He's not close to the power in Washington in any way. But Bill Clinton, since he was so deeply involved in this, together with George Bush Sr. and Bill Clinton's accomplice, a man called Dr. Dan Lasseter, these were the people really getting the whole so many tons of drugs into the States to destabilize the country, pumping out, making millions, destabilizing, at the same time making the whole American society so corrupt and so that the black population would start killing each other by pushing all the drugs and the weapons in a desire to get rid of the lower parts of society. But anyway, this scandal, this estate scandal, there were lots of things being revealed about Hillary and Bill Clinton's part in illegal actions in this White River scandal. And the papers were brought just before that, was brought from Mena in Arkansas and then brought to the exact same building, the Alfred Murray building, where the DA was going to look into it. Then when the building was blown up, you know, there's so many inconsistencies with this explosion in Oklahoma City. Like, if the bomb has been placed outside in a van, like they said, for one thing, the size of the bomb, in the beginning they said it was so and so much, like 500 kilos, I think. In the end it was like 7 tons or something like that, to be able to make a crater like that. But it wouldn't never have looked like that anyway. And sorry, I just need to... Sorry.
Yeah, no worries.
Anyway, You know, there was, with this bomb in Oklahoma City, there was so much proof showing that the explosive had actually been put inside the building, blowing everything out. So there was a lot of rubbish and furniture that was blown from the Alfred Murray building all the way over on the other side of the street, landing on floors even higher than where the furniture had been before, meaning that the explosion rate would have come from inside the building. Had it come from the vehicle in between the two buildings, the explosion would have gone out in all directions from where the vehicle was located. So it doesn't make any sense at all.
Yes.
And also, just like in Norway and in other places, on the morning of the explosion, you had the bomb squads, FBI bomb squads, came to the building and was parked outside. People were inside doing stuff in the garage, and witnesses saw them put things on the pillars and stuff like that. There's very often what they do a drill at the same time as the real events happens to make confusion and also to disguise and camouflage what they're actually doing. This happened with 9/11, it happened with the London bombings, it happened with in Oslo just a few days before the real thing happened, and it happened in Oklahoma City as well. But once the bombs had gone off and everybody came there to help and rescue, suddenly somebody came in and said, there's a second bomb, everybody needs to leave the area. So everybody was pushed out. There were still people dying in the rubble that needed saving, but everybody was pushed away a couple of hundred meters, and there were two trucks coming in, and then people in blue overalls coming in, and the only thing they did was to collect these boxes of documents that had to do with the Clinton case. So all of that out while people were lying dying. Once they got everything that out, these two vehicles left the area, and in came the normal people were allowed in again to rescue the people dying there.
Wow.
So in my opinion, once again, that is a very smelly thing, pointing again to this group.
For sure. Sure. Well.
If I can go back just a little again.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, if we go back to the Kennedy assassination, one of the persons working very closely to Operation 40, his name is Michael Vernon Townley, and he was a very skilled assassin that was used when they hit Salvador Allende. He was also used in Washington where they blew up a former politician, a former Chilean politician in the center of Washington. He was used in many different ways. He was also part of the Robert Smith assassination in South Africa. You know, one of these guys that if you have a very skilled person, you use the same person again and again. They just flow them. They just transport them to different countries, and then they put together a team of the same people, but with local backup. So they commit assassinations in many different countries, just like in movies, you see.
Yeah.
Anyway, this Robert Vernon Townley, he was also under the control of David Attlee Phillips. We're back to the same guy who controlled James Fyler, who was one of the shooters, who controlled Lee Harvey Oswald, and also this Robert Townley, Michael Vernon Townley, sorry. David Attlee Phillips gave Michael Vernon Townley an order to start two groups, one of them called Orban and Patricia, he gave, can you cut this away?
Yeah.
He gave Townley an order to start two groups where one of the groups, or both of them, were involved in the military attack on Salvador Allende. In one of these groups, there were two people, Roberto Tieme and another guy called Julio Izquierdo. Robert Michael Vernon no, sorry, Michael Van Tamley, Roberto Tiemme, and Julio Izquierdo. All of these three guys were part of the hit team that hit all of Palma that night so many years later.
Mm.
So we got wow. We got people directly connected to the Kennedy assassination, to the assassination of Salvador Allende, and the assassination of Olof Palme. Okay? Then you got, if we go back to Dealey Plaza, have you seen, he's called the Umbrella Man, and he's got been a mystery for many years. There's a man in Dealey Plaza, just when the limo, the president limo is about to pass, he unfolds a black umbrella.
Yes.
There's been speculation saying maybe he had a poisoned gun in this, or maybe it was shooting arrows or something like that. Because it was a sunny day, so there was no reason for this umbrella. But his part was to show the exact point where people should start shooting. Because since there were so many different shooters, you couldn't have them fire all over the place because you were going to blame it on one guy. So there had to be some, this is where the crossing point is. This is where you start shooting. That was his task. His name was Roy Hargraves. He was connected to this Operation 40. And the guy standing in front of him on these photos in the plaza, he's waving his hands like this. He's a dark guy. His name is Virgilio Paz. Okay. He was also connected to this exiled Cuban group and connected to Operation 40. And later in 1986, we're talking like 25 years later, just the months coming up to the Palma assassination, a man, a CIA man by the name of Charles Morgan, approached several different people to try and do the hit, you know, offering them $2 million to do the hit on Olof Palme. And this Charles Morgan is Virgilio Paz from Dealey Plaza.
Wow.
But direct connections between these different hits.
Wow.
It is a big old assassination team then, isn't it?
This is not known by very many. I've spoken about this on Red Eyes Radio, but not a lot of people know that as far as I know.
Goodness me. That is absolutely insane.
Can I also say about it? Because it's so, when you go into these, there's so many weird things around these types of things. The guy, the patsy that they had planned to blame this whole thing from Olof Palme on, do you know who that was?
No.
Not the guy that they later got convicted, because his name is Cleek Peterson, but he came in like a few years later because everything got messed up that night for different reasons I can get into another time. But the guy that they actually planned to pinpoint as the patsy, his name was William Klamm. He was called the crazy Austrian guy. And he was the guy that they had prepared evidence. He was the guy they were going to pick up, and case closed, boom, boom, within a few hours, case closed. He was the one who did it. He was crazy bomb. But this William Klamm, his real name is Josef, he was the guy who, a few years later, in 2004, I think, they found out that he had held his daughter imprisoned in the basement for 27 years, 24 or 20, 27 years. Do you remember the scandal?
A Fritzl.
And he had, they had, I think, he had five kids.
Listen, you're telling me it's Josef Fritzl.
That's the guy.
It's the same guy.
It's the same guy. And
so he's an assassin. Is that how he's got away with all of this?
The thing, I can only speculate why they picked that guy. I have no idea why they wanted to do it. But I think that this guy, they were using, both Mossad and the CIA was using him for passports, you know, fake passports and fake identities. He was doing these type of things. And I think that in 86, if you count back, he would have had his daughter there for quite a few years in the basement already. And I think maybe one of the reasons they chose him was that they knew for sure that they were black, they had him by the balls, that if he said anything or spoke anything, and they this whole thing, they could threaten him with this whole thing about his daughter. I think their plan was to get rid of him very quickly anyway. But it's the same person, yeah. Strange, eh?
Interesting. The plot thickens. Wow, yeah. Okay.
It's a very strange way to get into this, behind all of these assassinations.
Yeah. So, Oli, now you touched on a bit of that, and that seems to be a predominant thing here in Europe. We find that these people involved with various high-profile political scandals, assassinations, etc., tend also to be involved with paedophilia, child abduction, and all sorts of other quite what we call socially unacceptable behaviors. What is your opinion on that?
I don't understand the mindset of these people at all. I mean, for me, there's so much sick, what I would call sick behavior. It is almost like they're so into the male energy that they're scared of females, of women. So it's almost like they're so... One of the things that comes back again and again are these strange sexual behaviors.
Mm.
Homosexuals and with kids and... many on the street level, many of the people, the mercenaries and the assassins, they're homosexual. I don't know why, but they are. I don't know if it's a matter of energy or it's something I don't know about. But for sure, when you dig into these things, you come across it all the time. Very sick behavior.
Yeah. Well, of course, one of the what we call Illuminati bloodline branch managers of South Africa who did the most damage, being Cecil John Rhodes, of course, he was a homosexual, the son of a priest, an Anglican minister. So, you know, all these things tie back into each other. Again, I have to agree, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because I keep finding the same thing coming over and over again. It's a strange, perverted sexual behavior. And fair enough, if you are homosexual, but most of these people, if you met them, don't even come across like they've got a gay gene in their body. They just come across like they've somewhere been corrupted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not saying anything negative about homosexuals. Like,
yeah, for sure.
I'm just observing... behavior between among these people.
Yes, of course. No, fully understood that, yeah. Okay, well, look, we've been going for over an hour and a half. I think we should finish up. Let me ask you, is there any one last message you have for humanity?
Do you know, in the yoga group where I go, we have this beautiful... I'm not talking about yoga for the body, I'm talking Raja Yoga, which is the science of the mind.
Mm.
And this beautiful, beautiful teacher called Nelini Chelaram. And she has this prayer, she says, may the entire universe be filled with peace and joy, love and light. May everyone, and especially the one who hurts us, be filled with peace and joy, love and light. And I think that is exactly my point as well. You know, by these people, I think, are absolutely miserable. I don't know, but I cannot see them as happy people, having done all of these awful things and being in sharp waters, being surrounded by like-minded. I mean, it must be absolutely horrifying. And I just want this to stop, you know. I just want the madness to stop. It's enough, enough. We're all part of this game called life, and you need... black to be able to understand white, you need up to be able to understand down, and you need evil to be able to understand love and good. And I just think that we've come to a point now where the game has to move to the next level, which is beyond greed, beyond selfishness, beyond ego, just one world where we share and help each other and love each other. That is my vision.
Yes, indeed. All right. Oli Damagala, it's been an absolute privilege to speak to you. Thank you for all this information. I will edit this up and get it up as soon as I can, and I'll send you the link.
Thank you so much.
You're most welcome. We'll chat again soon, yeah?
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Lovely speaking to you.
Listen,